All right, let's dive in. Today we're taking a deep dive into a case that really shook things up. Cottage Savings v. Commissioner. We're going back to the 1980s, the savings and loan crisis, and financial institutions struggling to stay afloat.
No, it was a wild time. Think sky-high interest rates, mortgage values plummeting. It was a recipe for disaster for institutions like Cottage Savings Association. You know, they were holding all these low-interest mortgages that suddenly weren't worth much at all.
So they had to think outside the box, huh?
Exactly. And they found an interesting opportunity in a regulation from the FHLBB, Memorandum R49.
Okay, and what did that let them do?
Well, this regulation allowed them to swap mortgages with other institutions, mortgages that were considered substantially identical, without having to report those losses. It was a way to kind of, you know, get some breathing room.
So they saw a chance to kind of shift things around without raising any red flags, at least from a regulatory perspective.
Yeah, exactly. But the big question was, could they also use this swap to reduce their taxes? That's where Section 1001A of the Internal Revenue Code comes in.
Ah, the tax man always wants his cut.
Right. So Cottage Savings swapped a bunch of mortgages, 252 of their own for 305 from other lenders. Both sets were worth about $4.5 million at the time. But here's the thing. They claimed a big deduction on their taxes, like $2.4 million, based on the difference between what their old mortgages were worth and what the market value of those new ones was.
Wow, that's a pretty hefty deduction.
Yeah.
I bet the IRS wasn't too happy about that.
You guessed it. They challenged the deduction, and that's how this whole thing ended up in front of the Supreme Court. It really boils down to this tension between regulatory accounting and tax law.
Yeah, they both seem to use similar terms, you know, like substantially identical or materially different, but they mean different things in each context.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court had to figure out, did Cottage Savings actually dispose of property with this swap? And were these mortgages really materially different?
And that's tricky because, as you mentioned, the FHLBB considered them basically the same, right? So how could they be different for tax purposes?
Well, the court was very clear about this. Tax law doesn't just care about the overall economic picture. It looks at the nitty-gritty legal details. Sure, the mortgages might have had similar values, but they involved different borrowers, different collateral, and that means different legal rights.
So even if they looked similar on paper, those legal nuances made them distinct for the IRS.
Precisely. Justice Marshall, writing for the majority, put it this way, legal entitlements, not economic equivalents, control when you're trying to figure out if properties are materially different for tax purposes.
So they really zeroed in on the legal framework, not just the dollar amounts. But I think there was a dissenting opinion in this case, right? Someone who thought focusing on those small legal details missed the bigger picture.
Oh, absolutely. Justice Blackmun argued that getting hung up on these tiny legal distinctions was kind of missing the forest for the trees. He felt that the economic substance, especially given how the FHLBB viewed these mortgages, should have mattered more.
So how did the majority justify putting so much weight on those legal nuances over the economic realities?
Well, they based their reasoning on three key parts of the law.
Okay, let's break those down. What was the first one?
First, they pointed to Section 1001A itself, which basically says a disposition of property is a sale or a transfer. And they said, look, this swap definitely fits that definition. Cottage Savings gave up their rights to the old mortgages and got new rights to those new ones. It was a clear exchange, even if the overall value wasn't drastically different.
So it was all about that transfer of legal ownership, even if the underlying values were fairly similar. What was the second piece they relied on?
Next, they looked at Section 165A, which sets the rules for when you can claim a deduction for a loss. They emphasize that this section focuses on losses sustained during a particular tax year, and they interpreted that as requiring a specific event, like a disposition of property, to trigger that deduction. It's about connecting that actual realization of a loss through a change in ownership with being able to write it off, so to speak.
So they tied those two things together, actually getting rid of the property, legally speaking, and then being able to claim a deduction for that loss. Makes sense.
And what about the third pillar? What was that all about?
The third one, and maybe the most significant, was Section 7805A. This section gives a lot of power to the Treasury Department to basically interpret and enforce the tax code through regulations. And the court really leaned into this idea, emphasizing the Treasury Department's interpretation of material difference in Regulation 1.10111.
And that regulation, like the court's own analysis, put those legal distinctions above the broader economic picture, right? Exactly. The court felt that the Treasury's view was reasonable and decided to go along with their expertise. They basically said, look, Congress gave them the authority, and we agree with how they're reading the statute.
So even if the Sixth Circuit initially ruled against cottage savings, saying the losses weren't actually sustained, the Supreme Court gave more weight to how the Treasury Department saw the law.
Yep, that's right. This really shows how important this idea of deference is in tax law. Courts shouldn't be quick to overturn reasonable interpretations made by the agency that actually enforces the tax code.
So cottage savings managed to navigate all of that to claim that massive deduction. What does this mean for other financial institutions? Is it a loophole they can use to lower their taxes?
It's not so much a loophole, more like a roadmap. Cottage savings gave them a blueprint for using those subtle legal differences to realize tax losses, all while staying in line with regulations.
But I'm guessing the IRS didn't just sit back and let everyone run wild with this strategy.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Cottage savings definitely spurred some creative tax planning, but the game has changed since then. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, we call it the TCJA for short, brought in a whole bunch of new complexities.
Oh yeah, I remember that one causing quite a stir. What kind of changes did that bring in?
One big one was the introduction of these mark-to-market rules under Section 475 for securities dealers. This basically forces them to recognize gains and losses on certain securities based on their fair market value at the end of each year, instead of waiting for a sale or disposition.
Ah, so that throws a wrench into strategies that relied on timing the realization of losses through these cleverly structured transactions.
Exactly. So while cottage savings is still a landmark case, the TCJA's impact on how we deal with these financial instruments from a tax perspective is huge. It's a whole new ballgame, especially for the lawyers who are advising these institutions.
So things got a lot more complicated. It seems like while cottage savings gives us valuable insights into how tax law and regulatory accounting intersect, it's crucial to understand how later legislation, like the TCJA, has changed the playing field.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Welcome back to our deep dive into cottage savings v. Commissioner. Before we move on, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about the IRS pushing back against these types of, you know, tax strategies.
Yeah, it seemed like cottage savings could open the door for financial institutions to, you know, use these legal distinctions to their advantage.
Right, and that's why it's important to really understand Section 7805A. Remember, this section gives the Treasury Department a lot of power. They could, in theory, issue regulations that kind of, you know, narrow the scope of cottage savings or make it harder to use this strategy.
So even though the court sided with cottage savings, the Treasury Department still has some flexibility to control these types of transactions.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance, right? The Treasury Department needs to make sure the tax rules are clear and consistent, but they also have to prevent taxpayers from exploiting those rules for, you know, purposes that weren't intended.
Yeah, it's like a constant back and forth between taxpayers trying to minimize their taxes and the government trying to close any loopholes.
That's it. And that's what makes tax law so interesting, always evolving. Mm. But going back to our deep dive, we've talked about how cottage savings gave financial institutions a way to use those subtle legal differences to realize tax losses. But this case goes way beyond just, you know, mortgage swaps. It's had a ripple effect across all sorts of areas of tax law.
Oh, really? Like what?
Yeah.
How has cottage savings impacted other areas of tax law?
Let's take corporate reorganizations, for example. Cottage savings has been used to figure out if a reorganization qualifies for tax-free treatment. Courts look at whether the legal rights of everyone involved have changed in a significant way, even if, economically, the transaction seems like a continuation of the business.
So even in a big corporate restructuring, those small legal differences can be the deciding factor when it comes to taxes.
Exactly. And it comes up in partnership taxation, too. Trying to figure out if a partnership interest has been, like, disposed of often comes down to whether there's been a real change in the partner's legal rights, not just the value of that interest.
It seems like cottage savings made it clear that you need to really scrutinize these transactions, zoom in on those legal nuances. It's not just about the money changing hands, it's about the legal framework behind those transactions.
You got it. Cottage savings teaches us that those seemingly small details can have a huge impact when it comes to taxes. For transactional attorneys, this case highlights just how important documentation is. You know, every little change in loan terms, every shift in collateral, all those tiny details about ownership, they all matter when you're trying to figure out how a transaction will be taxed.
So attention to detail is critical. But sometimes it feels like all these legal complexities can be, well, a bit much. Do we really need to get bogged down in all these little details when the overall economic picture is pretty clear?
That's a good point, and it's something that tax experts are always debating. You know, there's this ongoing discussion about finding the right balance between being really strict with the legal form and considering the economic substance of things. Some people argue that a rigid approach can lead to some, you know, weird tax outcomes that nobody intended. Others say that clear legal rules are crucial for, like, certainty and predictability in the tax system.
So it's that classic legal dilemma of wanting things to be clear and predictable, but also needing some flexibility to deal with different situations.
Right. And cottage savings is at the heart of that debate.
Mm.
It really makes us think about how our tax system works and how much weight we should give to those legal technicalities when we're dealing with economic realities.
Well, cottage savings is definitely helpful. It also brings up these big questions about what tax law is really all about and how it connects to what's actually happening in the economy.
Mm.
Are there other lasting impacts from this case?
I think one of the big takeaways is that it's crucial to understand the whole regulatory landscape surrounding these transactions. Cottage savings shows us that how regulators account for things can be very different from how tax law sees things.
You're right. Remember how the FHLBB considered those mortgages substantially identical, but the IRS had a totally different perspective?
Yeah. And that difference in perspective can create some interesting opportunities for, like, strategic tax planning, as we saw in cottage savings. But it also shows us why it's so important to have both tax and regulatory advisors working together to make sure that everything's kosher on both sides.
So you can't just focus on the tax code. You need to know all the relevant regulatory rules, too. It's like playing 4D chess or something.
It is. It is. And that's part of what makes tax law so, well, fascinating and maybe a little intimidating for folks who aren't familiar with all the ins and outs. But with cases like cottage savings to guide us, we can start to understand these complexities and see how the tax system really works.
We've been diving deep into this case, but I still feel like there's so much to learn. Any other key points from cottage savings that our listeners should keep in mind?
I think it's really important to understand the historical context, you know. Cottage savings came out of the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s, a time of huge economic upheaval. That context explains why we saw all these, you know, regulatory responses and creative tax strategies.
It seems like understanding the historical background can help us see why certain transactions happened and why the legal arguments developed the way they did.
Exactly. And as tax laws change and newer economic challenges pop up, it's good to remember that tax law isn't static, you know? It's always changing, reflecting the economic and political realities of the time.
Cottage savings shows us that even those tax cases that might seem obscure at first can have a big impact, changing the way we think about and deal with taxes.
Absolutely. It really shows how powerful legal precedent can be and how tax law, regulations, and economic substance all interact with each other.
This has been such an insightful look at cottage savings. So far, we've seen how this case established that legal form matters more than economic substance. When we're talking about taxes, how it's influenced all sorts of areas of tax law, and how important it is to have clear documentation and good communication between tax and regulatory advisors.
You nailed it. And now let's move on to our last segment. We're going to look at some practical things transactional attorneys can learn from cottage savings and how this case is still shaping the way we navigate the PAX world, which, you know, never stops changing.
Welcome back. In this final part of our deep dive into cottage savings v. Commissioner, we're going to shift gears a bit and talk about what this all means for the lawyers out there, especially those dealing with these kinds of complex transactions.
You know, this case is like a gold mine for transactional attorneys. It reminds us that tax planning isn't just about the numbers. It's about understanding all the legal ins and outs that can make or break a deal.
So it's about making sure your clients are making money in a way that's tax efficient, but obviously, you know, still legal.
Exactly. And cottage savings gives us some valuable lessons on how to do that. One of the biggest takeaways is that it's super important to document all those little legal distinctions between the assets involved in a transaction, you know, really spell it all out.
Because even seemingly small differences, like having different borrowers or different collateral, can have a huge impact on how a transaction is taxed, right?
Right. Attorneys need to be incredibly detail-oriented. Clear documentation not only helps support a client's tax position, but also creates a sort of roadmap for dealing with audits and disputes down the line.
So you're not just trying to get the deal done, you're also thinking ahead, anticipating potential problems, and making sure everything is crystal clear.
Absolutely. And you know, it gets even more interesting when we factor in what we talked about earlier, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017.
Oh, right. The TCJA. with all those mark-to-market rules for securities dealers.
Exactly. That adds a whole new layer of complexity. Attorneys working in this area have to be on top of those rules and how they interact with what Cottage Savings established.
So it's like the rules of the game are constantly changing, and you got to stay ahead of the curve.
That's it. And it's not enough to just know the rules. You have to understand how tax and regulatory considerations play off each other. Cottage Savings shows us that you need a holistic approach, one that considers both sides of the coin.
It's like a giant puzzle where you have to see how all the pieces fit together to find the best solution.
Precisely. Attorneys who can do that, who can bridge those two worlds, they're the real MVPs. They can help structure deals that work for the client's business goals while minimizing their taxes and staying on the right side of the regulators.
It seems like being a transactional attorney is more than just drafting contracts these days. You have to be a strategic advisor, someone who can navigate all these legal and financial complexities.
You got it. And that's why cases like Cottage Savings are so valuable. They give us a framework for understanding how tax law works in the real world and what tools we can use to get the best results.
So for our listeners who are either aspiring transactional attorneys or already working in the field, what's the big takeaway from Cottage Savings?
I think the most important thing is to look at every transaction with a critical eye, pay attention to all the details, and see how they might affect the tax outcome. Don't just look at the big picture, dive into the specifics, understand how tax and regulatory rules work together, and be ready to adjust your approach as things change, because, you know, they always do.
So be detail-oriented and adaptable, two essential qualities for any lawyer, especially in the world of tax law, which is always in flux.
Absolutely. And remember, Cottage Savings shows us that tax law is rarely clear-cut. There's often room for interpretation and strategic planning. If you understand the basic principles and stay up to date, you can help your clients achieve their goals while minimizing their tax burden.
This has been a fascinating journey through Cottage Savings v. Commissioner. We've covered a lot of ground in the historical context, the Supreme Court's decision, how this case has shaped tax law, and what it means for transactional attorneys. As we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I just say this. Cottage Savings reminds us that even those tax cases that might seem kind of obscure can have a ripple effect.
Yeah.
It highlights how tax law is constantly evolving and why it's so important to stay ahead of the game. By learning from cases like this and applying those lessons to today's challenges, attorneys can not only guide their clients effectively, but also contribute to how tax law develops in the future.
That's a great point. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it informative and hopefully a little bit entertaining too. Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and remember, sometimes those little details can make a world of difference.